A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Not Another Mummy Podcast with me, Alison Perry. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Not Another Mummy Podcast. Something that I've wanted to discuss on the podcast for a while is parenting an older child. And today's guest, Sarah Gregory, has a 20-year-old son, as well as three younger daughters, aged 11, 8 and 6. Sarah talks about what it was like to have her son at age 18 and how she thought she would just be a mum of one until she met her husband and ended up having three more. She explains how different the experience was having her daughters in her late 20s and early 30s. She also talks about having an age gap, a large age gap between her son and her eldest daughter. Age gaps between children is something that I've given a lot of thought to since I became a mum. I've got 8 years between my eldest and my baby twin daughters. And as the years ticked along between them, I grew a bit anxious that having a large age gap would somehow have a negative impact on my family. But as Sarah explains, that's not always the case. As well as being a mum of four, Sarah co-edits the About Times, an online publication which features the writing of women. It promises to challenge everyone to step out of our echo chambers and explore the world through a different lens. So let's hear from Sarah. Sarah, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me here.
It's such a pleasure to have you. Now, Sarah, tell me about your family. You've got four children, haven't you?
Yes.
Let me see if I've got this right. Tom, who's 20.
Yes.
Emily, who's 11.
Yes.
Edith, who's 8.
Yes.
And Agnes, who's 6.
Yes. That's perfect.
Tell me about them. What is it like being a mum of four?
Oh, wow. It's hectic, but fun. And, yeah, I don't know. Just... I don't know any other life. I really enjoy it, and no day is probably like any other day.
Is it? So try and describe an average day for you guys. Like, what's, or is it lots of people coming and going? Is it a noisy household? Is it vibrant? Is it fun? What's it like in your house?
Yeah, it's very noisy. Everybody that comes in is just like, how do you live like this? The only peace time is when the children are at school, and then I don't have any background noise. It's all very calm. Like, I don't have the radio on or the TV or anything like that. It just has to be calm, and that's when I get most work done. But
did you savor the silence in those moments?
Yeah, totally. Oh, I meditate every day. I take my 20 minutes to do that. Every day I have to. But yeah, I do. I sit down and eat lunch and I just think, oh, wow, there's no one here. And that's quite nice.
Yeah.
I definitely appreciate silence.
Do you also enjoy the noisier moments too, though?
Yeah, because they are just part and parcel of my life. Like, I don't regret them all, but I just value them as much as I value the silence.
Yeah, lovely. Okay, so you've got quite a big age gap between Tom and Emily, haven't you?
Yes.
What led to that age gap happening?
When I gave birth to him, I thought he might be the only one that I had.
Were you 19 when you had him?
18.
18.
Yes. And then I turned 19 after he was born. Yes. So yeah, I was 18 and it was quite painful. It was life changing. And yeah, I just thought, I didn't even know, like, I'd never planned to have him. And I remember a few days before I found out I was pregnant, having a conversation with my English teacher at the time, and her talking about, you know, I'm trying for a baby and stuff. And I said, well, I'll probably think about it when I was in my 30s, and then had to go back a week later and say, oh, I'm actually pregnant. Mm. And so yeah, I never really pictured myself as being a mum. I was very academic and, you know, I had all of these plans. They were quite rigid. And then I found out I was pregnant. It was a fantastic thing, though. And it kind of changed my life for the better, because I probably never would have gone travelling or, you know, did all of the other things that I actually did. But I did think he would be the only one. And I met my husband when my son was... Oh, how old was he? Was he 4? And we all went travelling together. Wow. And then, yeah, a few years later, we thought, oh, give this a try. Like, see? And, yeah, it happened kind of relatively quickly. And we had our daughter. I don't think we planned to have 3, kind of, you know, I thought we'd just have, like, 1, possibly 2. But, yeah.
So. What was it like travelling with a 4-year-old?
It was amazing, and I would advise anyone to do it, because you have, like, there's no distraction. There's just kind of like the 3 of you. The most stressful decision you have to make is what you're going to eat for dinner, and you're not cooking it normally.
Yeah.
So, you know, just, I mean, we went around Southeast Asia and it's beautiful. I don't know if you've ever been, but it's so scenic. Culturally, it's just amazing. There's so much stuff to learn. And yeah, just moving around was really easy. And my son, he just absolutely loved it.
Does he remember it?
Yeah.
I guess 4, you know, quite common to have memories from when you were 4.
Yeah. It's really odd. The things that you think he would remember, he doesn't. Like, we went to Cambodia and did see him, you know, all of the temples and everything.
Yeah.
He doesn't really remember that. But he does remember that everybody wore flip-flops.
That's so funny.
Because I remember he used to note that everybody's feet were really wide, and, you know, it was, yeah, so he remembers random stuff like the name in Thai for water, yeah. You know, and just how he used to create these different, because we travelled light, so we never really had any toys.
Right.
So he used to make toys out of, gosh, this sounds really bad, doesn't it?
I think you should write a book about this, Sarah. I want to read about this.
Oh, no. He made, like, we used to make toys out of, like, water bottles and different things like that. And he used to create kind of like these, I remember it's like Crab Land, you know, these different kind of worlds, and just playing get lost in. And yeah,
I love it. It's a bit like a sort of family version of, is it Eat, Pray, Love? The
I never,
where she goes
that.
she goes on like a journey through various parts of the world and like to discover herself. But
I
it sounds
she's
like
amazing.
I
want to read that book. Actually, I might read that book this holiday. I keep promising myself I'll read that book.
It's quite
like
a nice
it.
Holiday read, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, it sounds like a sort of family version of that, where you guys were off kind of like discovering yourselves as a family. And
yeah, and people are so much more welcoming as well to families, because you can be like, oh, not another backpacker, you know. We didn't have that kind of, people welcomed us into their home.
Wow.
And like and Thomas was always really sociable as well, so he would go and like drag us along, make new friends, and yeah, we'd have all these kind of different experiences, I think, as if in comparison to if we were on our own.
So you were a mum of one for 9 years,
yeah.
And do you think that almost became part of your identity? I think when you are like you know, a mum of one child, it feels like that's part of who you are, I think.
Yeah, because I think that was like my whole adult life up until that point. So, yeah, I didn't really... Yeah, I think I was always identified as... Well, no, actually, I say that, but when I met my husband, he didn't know that I had a son. And I had no intention of telling him that either, because I didn't necessarily think we'd be together that long, because I was going travelling. Like, in my head, I'm very much, I'm going travelling and I'm taking my son. So we can just date, but I'm going travelling and that's it. And so, yeah, he didn't know initially that I had a son. And then I think one of his friends, well, actually, no, that's a lie. I thought he didn't know, but he did. One of his friends had actually said, oh, that she's got a son. But he never told me that he knew. It was probably about, we'd been seeing each other for about 2 months.
That's quite nice, though, in a way, because he's like respecting your boundaries and your you know, desire to share with him what you wanted to.
Yeah. And just so there was a part of me, like, and I was at university at that time as well. So I was a student and I did work as well. So, and I was a mum. So I suppose in that way it was quite compartmentalised. It wasn't so, I would say it's more fluid now, like, you know, everything rolls into one.
Yeah.
Whereas before I was definitely more, there was boundaries between each thing.
So when you were with him, you were probably more focused on...
Yeah, totally.
You know, you were, you know, dating, and rather than you weren't mum Sarah, you were dating Sarah, or, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense, actually. But and before that, had you felt like being a single mum was part of your identity? How did you find people, you know, treated you, I guess, being a young single mum?
Yeah,
did you feel any stigma?
I felt definitely being the young mum because I looked young as well. So people thought I was even younger than I was. So definitely, and I used to get judgments, and then everybody would always be shocked, you know, like that I'm at university or that I'm working as well.
Did that annoy you that people were shocked?
Yeah, but so many people that you just can't let it grate, otherwise you won't do anything. I just felt that's how they remedy what decisions they've made in their life, you know, maybe things that they didn't do, and that's how they come to cope with it. But I'm not limited by that. So for me, it was just like, right, I'm on this path and I'm doing this and you can think what you like. But...
And what was your experience? How different was your experience when you had your eldest daughter? Did that feel like a really different...
Yeah, it felt like being a mum all over again.
Did it?
Yeah, because I was obviously nearly 10 years older and I'd forgotten everything. It was completely new. And then I had this kind of dynamic as well where you don't have this baby moon that I see a lot of people have, because I had to do a school run. Yeah, I think my husband at that time, I think he had less than 2 weeks off, so he had to go back to work. And so, yeah, I was up doing this school run and, you know, and she never slept for about a year. She'd do these like kind of like 45 minutes, like little quick naps, and then she'd be awake.
That's like that classic sleep cycle thing, though, isn't it, that babies do?
Gosh.
They'll go sleep for 45 minutes and they're like, ding, I'm awake now.
I've got so much energy. and you're just like, you're crazy. So it was like, it was torture. I remember there was a book out at the time and it was called How to Love Your Child in the First Year or something like that. My friend, her son was born 2 weeks after my daughter, and she'd got him to sleep. He was like sleeping in this amazing routine. I was like, I just need to read that book and it will all work out. And I remember the piece of advice was, just start your day when they do. It doesn't matter what time it is, just start your day. I remember my husband getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning one time, and I'd bathed and dressed, both of us, and we were sat there and I was like, we're just starting our day now.
Oh my goodness.
We'll get the clock turned around. And he was just like, oh, what are you doing? And I just think it was just like in the midst of like torture and like that lack of rationality.
You grasp on to anything like that, don't you? Like, oh, this expert says it, so it must be true and we're going to do it, even if it's the most painful thing ever.
And I just want that sleep. And I think we've all been there.
Yes, many times.
But yeah, after a year, it kind of mellowed out and she was fine. She slept well ever since. So,
and have you found having a large age gap? Because this is something that I get asked a lot. I've got an 8-year-old and now I've got 2 5-month-old twins. And I get asked a lot about the age gap. And it was something that kind of, not panicked me, but as she was getting older, I was aware that any potential age gap was widening and widening. And I worried about the effect that might have on our family unit.
Oh.
Was that something that you ever worried about? Or, you know, when your daughter was here, did you...
Oh, it was funny because my son, from when he could talk, was always asking for siblings. And I just never thought it would happen. Yeah, I was thought, oh, I'm not really going
to
do that.
What did you say to him? Were you just sort of like, oh, maybe one day?
No, never said that.
No.
Because I never had any intention of doing it. So I didn't want to like lead him off a false path.
Were you like bigging up the whole single? You have to share your toys with people. You know, you don't want brothers and sisters.
Oh, no, because what if it did happen? I didn't want to say either way. I just
it's
think
tricky,
we kind
isn't
of, it's really tricky. Because I didn't want him to hate any kind of sibling if he did have one.
Yeah.
You know, like you just never know what's down the path. So I always said, you know, not now, because our life is like this and we're doing this. But I remember when we got married, my son was like, well, you're kind of married now, so are you going to have children like that? And then obviously we were I fell pregnant with Emily on our honeymoon.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. So so when we told him, he was ecstatic. So there is 9 years between them, but they're still really close now. I mean, as it's gone on, so like he you know, he's like 20 and the youngest one is 6. You know, they don't have the same relationship, but they do have a relationship. He still plays with them. He'll take them to the park. You know, there's a lot of like crossover in their kind of interest because they're all kind of like very much linked into fantasy and they love stories and reading, you know, all of these kind of things. They find different points of crossover where they can all get along.
That's so nice. Does he still live with you guys?
Yes.
You're all like a proper family unit.
How
do you juggle, how do you manage being a parent to such a wide range of ages?
It's just different, like, and it can be quite exhausting because I find that, like, once everybody, you know, there's a few people have said, oh, once they're in bed then I can relax. When they're in bed, sometimes that's when my son needs his emotional labour. He'll be sat there waiting for his time. And he needs that. So you've just got to find that energy. And it's not all the time. It's not every day. And as these things, like, you just have to balance it because sometimes children need you more on this day but not the next. Yeah. And so it's just about managing your time, emotional capacity, and seeing who needs it more. Because sometimes, I suppose, you need to... if it's not so tragic at one end, but it is at the other, that's where you divert your attention.
And do you think you get quite good at you judging who needs your time rather than always relying on them? Because sometimes kids themselves, you realise before they do that they need a bit of your time.
Yeah, and they're not always vocal. So I'd say my middle daughter's not always, she's not one to offer up. And if you ask if she's okay, she will go as far as to say, I'm okay and I've got a reason that's not true about why she's behaving the way that she is.
Oh, wow.
So
is that because she just doesn't feel comfortable chatting about it, or?
I don't know. I suppose it might just be a part of her personality. And it's when she's ready to talk to you, then she'll talk to you. And there's no point in forcing her. And I just think it's about being respectful of that as well, because it's up to her when she wants to speak as well and share. And she generally does, like, we do a thing at night where we do circle time before bed. So we talk about the one thing that's been really bad in our day, the one thing that's been really good, and the one thing that we're looking forward to tomorrow. And it just gives you that chance to offload. They normally have several things for each category, and it goes on.
See, if that was my daughter, she'd be like, 20 things, because she's trying to like put off bedtime. And another thing that happened to me today.
Oh my gosh. I know that, but it is quite good, and it's one of the things that we do use. It encourages them, you know, to share, and especially if you've missed something as well, like a cue, because I'm not perfect.
None of us are. Yeah. You miss things, and you've got 4 kids who are sending you cues, and it's tricky.
I think you learn and grow with them, though, as well. So each stage, like, every, you think, oh, does it get easier? I just think each stage prepares you for the next one. So it's not that, oh, your son is now 11, oh, he just takes care of himself. No, actually, at that age, he probably needed me more than he did when he was 6, and it was more intense, and it was more emotional, and, you know, it was deep. So
have you noticed a difference raising a child back when there wasn't, as you know, the technology was very different, you know? There were no kind of camera phones, there was no, you know, you didn't have the internet in, you know, in your pocket. How have those two things compared, do you think?
Well, it's interesting because I've seen it in different stages. So with Thomas, there was absolutely nothing. I think I had an email address. With Emily, that was when Mumsnet came about. So Mumsnet was really kicking off then. And I thought that was fantastic because you could talk to a midwife, you know, like if you had a sort of issue, you could be online and there'd be an answer for you within minutes. And then I think as well, the forums had kind of kicked in then. So we used to do meetups and different things like that. And for different interests, and actually that was quite nice to socialize and meet people who were, you know, had the same interests as you. So that was quite nice to build a community, and so that was lovely. And then I suppose with the last two, it was really deep in with social media. I think Facebook, you know, definitely was hot with Edith, but with Agnes then Instagram. I wasn't really aware of Instagram with Edith, but she was 2010, was, I think Instagram was more like 2012. And I didn't really, I think after I had Edith, that's probably when I got my first iPhone. Before that, I never really had an interface phone. I was more of a BlackBerry and just used to write.
That's so funny. I think people were definitely either a BlackBerry person or an iPhone person back in the day.
Yeah, you were like really defined by that. Yeah. And so, yeah, I didn't really... I noticed it a lot more and I was like, ooh, what is this world? It's different. I think there's so much information, which is a fantastic thing, but equally it's a really horrible thing because you can get lost and bombarded and actually stop listening to yourself, which you are the most important person to listen to. For me, my parenting has always been like a real pick and mix approach. I will research, I will look at different studies, what people are saying. Obviously not the moment when I was at 3 a.m. getting dressed, but not that point, but you know, like when I'm more rational, and then I come to my own conclusion, like what does that look like for me. Like I was never a Gina Ford kind of parent. I remember where I worked, my colleague was, and it just really worked for his family, it worked really well with their children and for their lifestyles. So it was a success for them, but for me, never, you know. And so it means that there's no one right way. It's what works for you, but you definitely have to listen to your inner voice.
Yeah, it's like your gut instinct, isn't it? Something you can read all the books in the world, but if none of the advice feels right to you, then there's no point. Otherwise, you end up getting up at 3 a.m. and starting your day at 3 a.m.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
So you're about to, with your girls, I guess, you're probably about to hit that kind of teenage, not quite yet, but you're in that kind of...
tweenage.
Yeah. You've been through it before. You've parented a teenage child, but do you think it will be different with girls than it was, you know, leading a boy through that stage?
I don't know if the like gender plays a role. I think like it's more the child, like, you know, and how they are. Like, so my son, like, I look at his friends and they weren't necessarily as emotional as he was. Like, they didn't have the same needs that he did. And so I am aware of that, and I feel that, you know, with his sisters it'll probably be quite the same, because they're quite similar in that way. They think quite deeply, and we've always brought them up to kind of make their own decisions about their lives, and we've given them ideas and we have open conversations about it, but ultimately they make decisions, so they are responsible. So I suppose with that kind of parenting, then you open yourself wide when it comes to kind of the teenage years. So I don't know how much gender specifically for my family will play a role, because we don't say, oh, girls are like this and boys are like that. We've never done that.
It's funny though, isn't it? Because in 2019, you know, the idea of, like, we talk about toxic masculinity and feminism, and I think that a lot of us really think about that when we are parenting and when we are talking to our kids.
Yeah.
But I guess 19 years ago, people weren't talking about toxic masculinity. No. Do you think that it's, did you think that you just brought up your son in a way that felt right for you? And
they weren't talking about it at all. But I think the thing for me was, like, I remember they were, because smacking was quite popular.
Oh, goodness. Back in the day.
And, yeah, it's all right, you know. And I was never down with that.
Didn't do me any harm.
Oh, gosh. And a lot of that went on. And that was like a reaction. And for me, I could never teach my son to not be violent by...
Well, exactly.
By doing that. So I couldn't get my head around it.
It's fine
it.
For me to smack you, but...
But you don't smack anybody else,
you
know.
It doesn't make any sense.
And so I, like, getting your... And I remember thinking that one day you will be bigger than me and how am I going to smack you? You're just going to laugh. So we need to get on a level where we can always have this relationship and we can always talk. And so it doesn't matter what it is, we need to talk it through and we need to have a mutual respect for each other.
That's so good. That's really good. And with your girls, what messages are you sort of sending them in terms of, you know, how they take on the world and how they, you know, live their lives and find their place in the world?
For them, I think, well, they're all kind of very different. And it's the elder one now that we're going for, you know, they reach that age at the end of primary school where it becomes like you just can't be anymore and you have to be a part of a group, you know, and there's all these kind of pressures that start to arise. And I mean, she doesn't have a smartphone. So, you know, every child in a class has a smartphone and, you know, there's all these like different pressures and...
That's really hard though,
just
isn't
fit
it?
In.
I'm not looking forward to getting to that stage. Already my 8-year-old is sort of saying, when can I get a phone? And I'm like, why are we even having this conversation? Yeah. You are nowhere near getting a phone. But I know that, you know, when she gets to kind of year 5 or year 6, it will be a case of, but everyone in my class has got a phone. And what do you say?
Well, with our son, he didn't get one until he was, like, he had one that didn't have an interface. But when he was 16, he asked for one with an interface. But by then, he, you know, he read well, all of those things. So it wouldn't be that he'd just be on his phone. He knew how to have fun and entertain himself in different ways. So we didn't mind that. And I remember I had all the logins for all of any accounts that he had, his email and all those things. And it wasn't that I was snooping through them, but, you know, it was just that kind of, I just wanted to keep him kind of safe in a way. And for him, and he was quite comfortable to know that if he got into any kind of situation, then I was there as well. He's just still young.
Yeah.
And we're still finding our way in this world. We still don't know what this means because it's such a limited amount of time. So just send your child out there into the wilderness, I'm not quite sure about.
Well, I read something about somebody compared it to the equivalent of just dropping your child off in the middle of a park, you know, in the dead of night, and then just leading them to it and seeing how they get on.
Yes.
It's kind of the
same. Yeah, you get to the other side.
Yeah. Like, they'll probably be okay, but is it a sensible thing to do? No.
But like, so with my daughter, she knew that we had this rule that you could not hold the phone until you had a contract.
Okay.
And so until you could legally have a phone, you couldn't have one.
I like that. I'm gonna write that down.
But then we got to the point she then felt that, you know, she knew her brother used to travel to school, like, and this is why he did have a phone. So he had two trains to take. And she thought, she's not going to be allowed to go to school because he had a phone for that specific reason.
Right.
And so she was really upset because she thought she wouldn't be allowed to walk to school by herself, you know. And so we decided to get her one of these old school Nokia banana phones. So she's got one of those.
Yeah.
She doesn't really use it. It's never really charged. You know, it's one of those, but she does have one.
Yeah.
And so you were asking me, sorry about, I've gone totally off kilter.
No.
But you were asking me about social media and... I just think, like, they talk to me about things like Instagram, you know, because they're aware of it. They know all of these things. And there's one, TikTok, you know, all of these things.
I've heard of that. What is the TikTok?
It's where you do the music. So I suppose it's a replacement for Musical.ly.
Oh, OK.
You know, and so they are very aware of it and their friends are doing it. But they ask me around things like likes and what does that actually mean? Mm. And so they're the conversations. I never want to have, like, oh, you can't do this and you can't know what it is. I want them... to know exactly what it is and what it means and what it means to your life, and to have an education around it. So for them, when they're confronted with it, it doesn't knock them sideways. They actually know kind of how to cope with it. And it's about building up all of those other things, like, on in the background, so it doesn't matter what anybody says, because they can't define you. Only you can do that. And having consent, you know, things like that. I'm just thinking about all the things that we talk about, you know. So it's up to you what you take on board about what other people say and about what you do. So, yeah.
Love that. And you're about to head to Ghana for a month, did you say?
Yes, pretty much. Just shy of a month.
Are you all going?
Yes, we're all going. But the children are staying for 2.5 weeks, nearly three, because they've got to come back for school.
Their school holidays.
Yeah.
How much, was it your grandmother who was from Ghana originally?
Oh, and my dad.
And your dad as well. How much do you think that your heritage influences how you parent?
Oh, that's a really interesting question. I think it does, like, it does influence me in a way that, obviously because of my upbringing, and then my dad's experience. He came here when he was like 10 or 11. So he had that those kind of formative years where he was in Ghana, and just, so the society is completely different in terms of, like, it's more matrilineal, and an outlook and all of those things, which he would then replicate here, and because that's the way he knew and his experience. So he was brought up by his mum here. Sorry, I'm getting all twisted now because I've never been asked that question before. And I suppose that's what kind of comes down. I mean, visibly for me, because I've always been considered other, I've always in a way looked at others, so either being part Ghanaian or part Irish. Mm-hmm. I've always explored both of those aspects of my identity and celebrated them and then shared them with my children.
So the Irish, is that your mum's
side? Yeah.
Right. Okay. That's quite a mix, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just completely changing the subject to About Times. This is something that I really want to ask you about. So you co-founded About Times.
Yes.
With Sarah.
Yes.
Tell us a bit about it, first of all.
I think there was a bit of a sadness that I noticed, like, because obviously I came to Instagram, I think, quite late, comparatively to everybody else. And one thing that I did see was there was always just, for me, what felt like one single story that was coming back at me. And I don't know whether that was intentional or whether that was algorithms, but I just didn't see, like, a wide variety on there. And so when it came to motherhood, it would always be like, I don't know, a middle class white mum who has one, possibly two children, and they haven't got to a certain age yet. And then that would be, they'd be talking about parenting and giving you tips. And it's not that I don't feel that there's space for that. And I think we all learn, and obviously there's stuff for me to learn in there as well, but it's not the full complement, like, it's not the full story.
Yeah.
And so that was how Make Motherhood Diverse come about. I felt like there was a real need for Make Motherhood Diverse because I just wanted to hear all stories of motherhood. Mm. So that was done jointly with Nicola and Candice. And when we were coming up to a year, we ran an event, a live event. And I was just really interested. It was a sellout and we had amazing people on the panel. And there was not a dry eye in the house when some of the stories were shared and people were laughing out loud. And it was really authentic. It came from people's hearts, you know, these stories. And so there's all this, I can see this with my eyes, but on Instagram, it was always about, like, authenticity and we need to be real. Mm. But then I'm hearing these real stories and they are nowhere near. There's no place for them on Instagram.
Why do you think that was? I mean, I've had conversations about this in the past, but I'm interested to hear what you think. Why do you think that what Instagram serves up is such a narrow view of motherhood, narrow version of it?
I think it's an extension of our society. I don't think that society does this very well. I think it's the same thing. Like if you look at magazines or if you look at the news or if you look at TV shows, it's all kind of sculptured in a certain, in a particular way. I don't think that Instagram is something like completely different. It's just an extension of that. But what made it stand out so much for me is because I was going there and I was choosing to spend time, and I suppose it was my echo chamber.
Yeah.
And so, and for some reason I couldn't curate that. So yeah. I really struggled with that. So then Make Mother Diverse came and I was just like, oh wow, these squares are amazing, these stories, really getting in there and feel that. And obviously we had this the event, and then I was really shocked that nobody picked it up. So no media, there was no media presence, and nobody came in and like said, oh, these stories are amazing, we need to continue, we need to support this, you know, or get behind this. I didn't really feel that kind of, that wasn't one of the things that came out of it. And then somebody said to me at the end, yeah, it's all right for us to think this, but do you think it's really valid? Because there's nobody else here. There's nobody else who can lift this up.
It's like a preaching to the converted almost,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And I said to her, well, I don't think we need that kind of validation. Actually, for me, it was enough, the people that were here and experienced this evening, because actually that kind of in-depth, you know, when you speak from your heart, there's nowhere else for anybody to hide, you know, like you're... So that for me was real. But I did a post after that and said, you know, do we need validation? What do we need to validate us? And along comes Sarah and she says, well, you know, it was a missed opportunity from the Independent or from here, you know, they should have picked up on this. And then she came back and she said, no, we don't need their validation. What we need is more women's voices. And we just need to forget all of the noise and say, right, we're here.
Yeah.
We've got these voices. We know we can tap into them. We can bring them to the forefront and everybody can read them. And we don't need somebody to tell us, you know, we don't need an editor to say that that's not important.
You don't need a platform. You can be your own platform.
Exactly. And you can just bring these stories to the forefront and then you can just push them forward. And they're so, and what I love, because with motherhood, not all women are mothers. Mm. So actually about times, it's about women and all of the aspects for us. So it's a wider, like it still has the column for, and we've changed it to make motherhood inclusive now, because that's really what it always should have been, rather than diverse. So yeah, we've changed that to make motherhood inclusive, and that will always be there. But also it's about all of the other parts of our identity as well being explored, and there's been some amazing stories there and things that I, conversations that I've had that I want to see out there. Like, and one that I'm thinking of is, like, I think it was the first or the second issue where we talked about the hijab being a symbol of female empowerment alongside sex toys. And nobody's discussing that. Like,
no.
People are thinking, right, how? And then that draws people in and they can read two well-written articles as to why.
And have you had anything, you know, have you had anybody pick up on stuff like that, you know, other mainstream publications get in touch with you and say, we want to run something on this? Or actually, is that not the point? Is the point that's not the goal?
I don't know if it's the goal. It's not happened yet. I wonder, I don't know if you remember the Vagenda.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so
yeah.
My fear...
Is that not so good anymore?
No, it got swallowed up. And I want to say by the New Statesman, I hope I've not got that wrong, the two women that did it, they have moved into kind of mainstream.
Yeah, I've seen them. I've seen like them popping
the
up doing columns.
Yeah,
and,
doing columns and different things.
Yeah.
But the Vagenda is no more. And the idea was that it was going to be a part of, I think it's the New Statesman. But yeah, then it just kind of disappeared and it might be a column in there. But yeah, it wasn't that standout thing that it was. I think that there's always been, like, none of the ideas are really kind of new. And when I say that, I mean, you know, there was always these ideas around communities and dissidents and feminism, but they were all not as in your face. They were not in your front line where you could make a decision, you know, about gender fluidity. It just wasn't a thing. It wasn't that it wasn't discussed in this corner, but it might not have been discussed in your corner. And then there was no connect, no bridge between you and that conversation.
It wasn't as mainstream as it is now.
Yeah, which is right. It's moving in the right direction.
Absolutely.
It should be out there.
Yeah.
100%.
How much, on that subject, how much... should we allow people time to learn about this stuff and Because obviously we're all learning all the time. Yeah. I think that there's been a bit of a culture recently for like calling people out and saying, you're not learning about this fast enough, you know. You need to you know, be better. And
I suspect that it's really hard question, because I don't think there's a fixed time. I think the people who are learning have to understand that the people who've had enough, they had enough 10 years ago, so they've not got the stomach for it.
Yeah.
And then, and just being sensitive to that. And then the people who have not got the stomach for it, they have to recognise that people are waking up.
Yeah.
And they really have had everything kind of geared and prepared and sorted for them, and they've not seen that there's been an issue until now. And so it's, I don't think it's something that people have necessarily actively said, oh, I'm just going to ignore this because my life is great. They might have just had like complete barriers up and just not seen it. So
what's that privilege thing though, isn't it, that when you are living in privilege, it's very easy to have those barriers up, even if you haven't actively, you know, made that decision to put them up.
Well, we all have it. I mean, even just by proxy of living here, we all have privilege, you know. So that we all have, it's just about being aware of those privileges and not being so sensitive that when somebody points them out, we're open to breaking them down. And what can we do? Mm-hmm. You know, it's not a case of, I've not done this and I feel, and I regret what I haven't done.
Yeah.
It's about looking that way and what can we do to change this? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's where we're going.
Sorry, I could talk to you about this for hours, but really interesting. So what's next for you? Because in the past, you've written a children's book and you're writing a novel at the moment, I think.
Yes, I am. And it's going through multiple edits. It's one of those things that I always feel like, oh, I need to hurry it because I've said that I'm doing it. But actually, crafting these things takes time, especially if it's going to be what I want it to be. And for me, like, I've had to go back recently because I've tried to steer it a certain way to make it commercial, but actually that was not what it was originally about. So I've clawed it back, and I'm just re-editing.
Okay.
Now. So yeah, it is coming. I am working on it. I'm not being too anal about it, but it is coming.
Everyone's like, "Come on, hurry up!
Come on, get with the program, Sarah!" And then you start this new thing. What are you doing? But yeah, there's a lot. Like for me, I just feel that it's quite hard for young people now. You know, in terms of recognise, they feel like they're the revolutionaries, you know, that it's just started now from day dot. But there are so many other stories and so many things that have happened, and actually history is really important for this, and understanding the story and connecting the dots to make what you're doing have substance and flow.
Well, on that note, thank you so much for being my guest. It has been brilliant. Thank you.
Oh, lovely. Thank you very much for having me.
Isn't Sarah brilliant? She's the kind of person I could sit and have a cuppa and a natter with for ages. Thank you so much for listening today. Please review, rate and subscribe to the podcast, and I'll catch up with you next time.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.